My name is Daniel, and I am interviewing Bill. Bill, please tell me a little bit about your life before you found AA, when and where you were born, and what kind of childhood did you have?
I was born in Rome, Georgia, 1940. One of six children. Dad was an alcoholic. He was an alcoholic until, he was an active alcoholic until I was about 10, and he recovered through the Christian Science Church, but it wasn't what we consider recovery. He was always unhappy. I never had any abuse as a child. My parents were great. We were poor, but I didn't know it. I finished high school in Rome. Went on to a shorter college. And after that, the Medical College of Georgia. My first drinking was in high school. A couple of my friends decided that I needed to learn how to drink, and so after junior-senior prom, one of them bought a pint of liquor, and we went out to a motel. I promptly consumed about half of that, and I remember about five more minutes after that. I was sick as a dog all night. When I came to the next morning, the place was a mess, and they were ready to get me home. So I didn't drink a little while after that. But then I started playing with it a little bit, and I just loved it. It certainly changed the way I felt, I think, more than it affects the ordinary person. I think there's something about the genetics that makes us feel a different high. At any rate, I personally think that if everybody felt the high I felt, everybody would be alcoholic. I didn't get terribly heavy with that. I did drink some as a freshman in college. Was a real good student, so spent more time at work doing my studies, and I worked at the same time. So I really didn't have that much time to drink, though I drank, and sometimes abusively. By the time I was a sophomore, I was picking up my drinking and getting a little problem with it. I would have blackouts and thought that was normal. Some of my friends drank pretty heavily too. By the time I got to my junior year in college, I had also picked up amphetamines and was having problems with that at the point that I just couldn't do any kind of studying without taking amphetamine. Alcohol stronger and stronger all that time. Finally, in my junior year, I decided I'd drop out of college. And I transferred over to Clemson University, where I really got sicker. I had a suicide attempt there, was sent to some doctors in Greenville, South Carolina, who did not ask me a word about my drinking, as far as I can remember. They did know about the amphetamines and, of course, recommended that I not do any more of that. Last time I went to the psychologist, he recommended that I drop out of college and go to the Army, which I didn't appreciate too much. And so I dropped out of Clemson, and the next semester went back to Shorter College in Rome. Because that was withdrawn subjects up there, it really didn't do anything to my record. And so by the time I was a junior, even though I was drinking a lot, I was able to apply to medical school and get in pretty easily. Finished college there, went on to medical college. I always held a lot of jobs on the side. And so that did restrict the amount of time that I had to drink to some extent. When I got to medical college, I became the house manager for a fraternity house. That gave me access to the alcohol. We had grain alcohol stored there. The fellow that had given the fraternity that house also had a safe, a walk-in safe, that was full of alcohol. So I made use of a great deal of that. I didn't drink every day, but when I drank excessively. Had blackouts. I really learned about amphetamines. I did not do that again. That was a pretty bad experience with the depression and actually what seemed like at that time some schizophrenic thoughts, delusions. None of that recurred. I studied pretty hard in med school, which limited the amount of time for drinking. Finished med school, married the year before I left med school, which was probably the best thing I ever did. She's still with me. Graduated med school, went to Macon, where I did my internship.
Is there a point that you can say where you're like, this is the point where I feel like I might have lost control?
It's kind of hard to identify a point. I had a good friend in medical college tell me I had a problem, which I shucked off. I just didn't believe it at that time. I enjoyed drinking. Didn't really conceive of giving it up at that time. I realized in the first couple of years of work after finishing med school that I did have a problem because of the problems it created in my work.
Would you say that would be your bottom when you identify that it was a problem? Is that what you would consider your bottom?
Not by any means. My bottom didn't come till after I tried for 4 years to get sober.
All right. So after those 4 years, how and when? So, okay, well, you got started in AA, and what was that? Was that process almost like a seed planting over the 4 years? How did that process of AA, how did that start? How did you come to a meeting, you know, what led up to you crossing over from your alcoholic life to recovery?
My recovery was long and hard. I knew when I was practicing with the horrible blackouts and horrible hangovers and difficulty getting to work because I felt so bad, alcohol craving by mid-afternoon every day, that I really had a problem. I was on another compound at that time, and I really blamed all that on the other compound. I think I had so much denial, I just could not bear the idea of giving up alcohol. And so I went to a treatment in South Georgia, and promptly that doctor told me I was an alcoholic and that I couldn't drink anymore. And it was just kind of hard for me to accept. I kind of figured after I'd been sober for a little while that I would eventually be able to at least drink a couple of beers every now and then. I didn't tell him that because I never would have gotten out of that hospital if I'd told him that. At any rate, I came home and he had arranged for me to meet two men in AA as soon as I got home. These were sort of temporary sponsors, one of which became a permanent sponsor. And later the second one became a permanent sponsor.
Where was that first meeting?
It was at the Biscayne Room, which by that time had moved onto Row Road in an old warehouse, and that was in December of 72. The Biscayne had initially started on Baxter Street in the 60s, and I'm not sure how long it had been there.
What's your initial opinion of that meeting?
I loved it. Everybody was so friendly, generous. My wife actually was with me there, and I made some of the best friends almost immediately in AA that I'd ever had.
Do you remember anybody from that first group that you might still see or have contact with?
The only person that I can remember from that group is a fellow named Carl here who came to that group some. And then a lady named Margaret, who was one of the founders of that group, who is still alive, and I talk with her on the phone occasionally.
Was there any highlights that stick out to you in that first year of trying to get sober that anything good come from being associated? You say you had a hard time sticking and staying for a while. Was there anything that was good, or did the highlights come after the 4 years when you actually became sober?
I was regular for the first few weeks, and it wasn't until about 6 weeks out when I figured my liver had recovered that I decided to try 2 beers. I was almost immediately back in the same situation as before I went to the hospital, which amazed me. I called that doctor again. He said, quit drinking and go to AA. Didn't invite me back to the hospital. It took another few months before I got so sick that I was willing to go to a hospital again. If I was sober for a day or two, I might go to AA during that period, but I was too embarrassed drinking to go. I did have contact with the sponsor during that period of time, who amazingly kept trying to help me all the way through the rough 4 years. The folks in AA were always gracious when I came back. I know I burned people out because I swore off so many times. At any rate, after the second hospitalization, I stayed sober for about 6 weeks again and drank again. After the first hospitalization, I realized that I couldn't drink or drug at all. After the second hospitalization, despite the fact that I realized that the craving was so intense, I just could not do without it. And so I relapsed. That made me feel pretty hopeless. My tolerance increased, my quantities increased.
I think the big question here is, at 4 years, what made you transition into, what was the transition? What did you do different at 4 years?
At 4 years, I was so desperate that I decided I was probably going to hurt somebody else pretty soon in some sort of mistake. I could not stop. I had tried just about every mechanism that you can think of to stop. I finally got down to the point of detox at home. I'd already been to 13 hospital stays trying to get sober. I tried to commit suicide. I was in ICU for a day or two and then transferred over to a program in Atlanta. And that was not a 30-day program. When you went to this program, you were just there indefinitely. At that point, I was so beaten. That's my low point, absolutely. I woke up in the hospital and I asked this doctor how long I'd be there. He said, oh, I don't know, 6 months, 2 years. And it didn't matter to me because I couldn't do anything about the problem myself. I couldn't drink. I could not drink. I couldn't live. I couldn't die. So I did what he told me. And his was a 12-step program. There was a lot of scientific information in his program too, but basically it was a 12-step program. From the hospital there, I went to live with another recovering man, and from there to a halfway house. In that halfway house, I really started doing the steps, including the third step. That's where I really did the third step for the first time, which changed my life.
Mm-hmm. So while you were working these steps, these first few days of actually applying these steps, was there some learning, some events maybe, or some epiphanies that were coming to you while you were working these steps?
Well, of course, by then I didn't have a bit of trouble with the first step. I had been an agnostic, but about 8 months before the last hospitalization, I had become a Christian. But you know, becoming a Christian and being able to say you believe something is not the same as having an association with that being. It was in the halfway house where I became desperate enough to finally get on my knees. And with a great deal of meaning, I'm sorry, I might get emotional. With a great deal of meaning, turned my problems over to my God. No matter how many times I talk about it, I can't ever get through that with that. Things changed so dramatically after that I could see that God had been working in my life long before I ever prayed that prayer. I think it was pretty easy for me to work the steps after that. And I learned when I had a problem that I couldn't solve, that I didn't just have to do that alone. It really freed me up so much. I had always been an absolute provider, thought I had to know everything. First, when you're agnostic, you have to be your own God, basically, and that's pretty desperate. But my life just got a lot better after that. After 4 months, I came home from that, pretty soundly established in AA, and started back into AA. And I think for the first 8 years of my sobriety, I never went to less than 5 meetings a week.
And you spoke of, was it a doctor from a treatment center that was scientific, as you described him? And
yeah.
Was he your first sponsor, or did you have a sponsor? And if you did, when did you get one?
I already had a sponsor, and that was Russ. Even though I had been sick so long, though Russ stopped contacting me on a regular basis, he still believed I would get sober. And when he was contacted, I was in ICU, he came over, and he's the one that took me to this Atlanta program. I never heard of it before. Most people had never heard of it before. In fact, I was the seventh patient in the program. And he was a strong sponsor after that. In those days, sponsorship was a strong deal. You contacted your sponsor every day, or he contacted you, and you did what he said to do.
So that relationship, how would you describe that relationship?
Close, kind of tough, though. Russ was an old-time sponsor. It wasn't peaches and cream. When he told you to do something, he expected it to be done.
Right. And do you have any memorable experiences with this sponsor? Do you have any memorable experiences when sponsoring others?
I've seeing people start to get well is memorable in every case, I think, when you see the light come into somebody's life.
Is there any individuals that have had some prominent, especially prominent in your sobriety? Is there anybody that was just, they were a little bit different and they meant a little bit more, and you just bonded a little bit more than the average fellow you reached out to?
Actually, my closest relationship was with the second sponsor. Russ became ill, died a short time afterwards. Jim H. became my sponsor. And this man was just extremely unusual. He called me every single morning from 6 to 6:30 and asked if I was going to take a drink today, and told me, "Don't you take a drink today." And this went on for years and years and years. I don't know how many people he did that with, but he did to a lot of people, I think. He was just a super sponsor. Of course, I knew him back in the drinking days, in those bad 4 years. He flew an airplane, and he would actually call my wife and see if she knew where I was, and if she didn't, he would fly over Oglethorpe County looking for me, because he knew about the several places I would go to drink. One time I looked up in the sky, and he was circling, shaking his fist at me.
Tell me how 12-step work has evolved, and if it has or if it has not. The 12-step call, two AAs going after a drunk, or and how that has changed. Have you noticed any changes? Or?
Because I'm in medicine, I had a kind of unique opportunity to help people. I think about the second year I was back and strongly in AA, I recognized that there really just wasn't any appreciable treatment in this area for alcoholics, and I decided to establish a program. I got all the doctors together and talked to them, and talked to the administration, and they allowed me to establish a separate program from the psych unit, and I managed that program for about 20 years. Since then, I've seen a lot of alcoholics in my office. Many of the people that I had treated in that center became my patients, and it was great to follow them. I retired about 3 months ago and decided after about 6 weeks that I would open a small practice for addiction, which again just gives me a lot of satisfaction.
In your early sobriety, what did you think about the AA literature being the big book, 12 and 12? Grapevine, which I don't know, was around the slogans. And how often did you use that literature and or the slogans?
I thought the program was great. About the only thing I've ever disagreed with in the program was that addicts are kind of separated out from alcoholics. I studied the Bible a lot at that time and read a lot of the history of AA too, and I came to realize that the Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew 5, 6, and 7, contained the same ideas as are contained in our slogans, a great deal of our program. And so it was pretty easy for me as part of my quiet time every morning to actually study the Sermon on the Mount and from the mouth of God get instruction as I would get it in AA, except I think with a little more authority. I later understood that the Oxford group, which was the precursor of AA, had actually based the program on the Sermon on the Mount in the book of James.
How did early AA, how did they treat the newcomer when, say, you finally were sticking around after that 4 years, and you had maybe say you had about a year, and how were they treating a newcomer at that time?
You know, everybody, to my knowledge, has always been strongly welcomed into AA, but it was stronger then. When you came to the meeting the first time, people talked to you a lot, made sure you had telephone numbers. If you didn't call them, they'd call you. They made sure you had literature. If you didn't have transportation to meetings, they'd get you there. It was just a stronger organization, and I think sponsorship was stronger at that point than it had become later.
And you've already touched on this, but I want to know, you know, I want to ask you directly what your thoughts are on the controversy surrounding the singleness of purpose, as well as increased presence of multiple addictions. How do you feel about that?
You know, I've become an addictionologist, and I realize that addiction is addiction, and differentiating out the substance is okay in one sense. I think people identify, if they're alcoholic and they come to AA, they identify with AA more. The problem is an awful lot of people, especially young people nowadays, have had both experiences. They come in with mixed problems. And trying to, you know, tell them they have to go to NA or AA is kind of artificial, I think, because to my mind, it's all the same disease. You differentiate the substance or the way you get it into your body, but addiction is pretty much addiction.
So, I believe you talked about programs, and so these treatment centers, they existed in your area when you were sober?
Yes.
They did. And did any of them use the 12-step format or incorporate meetings into their structure?
All of them.
All of them did.
In fact, I don't think they would have had a program had it not been for AA.
During the early years of your recovery, how did the community receive AA?
You know, it's Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's pretty much that way. The community has, because of our traditions and the separation there, the anonymity, I don't think the community has a great deal to do with it. The community respects AA, but as far as approving or disapproving There's not a lot of that. Now, ministers sometimes will feel that AA is a cult. My own minister felt that way. I love my minister. He's a great guy. He helped me to get well in a lot of ways. But he and I will never see addiction the same. So even though this program comes from Sermon on the Mount in the Book of James, he thinks it's a cult.
How and why did you get into service work?
When I've been, I consider practicing addiction service work. I did some service work within AA itself, but my greater service work has been treating addicts and alcoholics. I was in the emergency room, I guess it was a year after I got back. And, you know, back then it was kind of hard to get hospitals to take alcoholics for detox or anything else. One of our hospitals has only just started allowing alcoholics to be detoxed there. I was in the emergency room, and there was a guy in the hall on a stretcher, and he was convulsing. Nobody was paying him any attention. I went to a nurse, and I said, "Look, y'all know this guy's convulsing out here." And she said, "Don't worry about it, Doc. He's just an alcoholic." I was so agonized over that. That's really why I started the program.
What do you remember about early conferences, assemblies, and conventions?
I've been to a few of those. I really don't have any outstanding memories of them. Certainly, I've enjoyed local AA more than I enjoyed any of them.
Can you recall opening intergroup or central offices?
No, I never did that. I started a meeting, but I never opened any central offices.
And how has technology changed AA service work?
Hard question. I really, in my case, I think I can educate addicts a little bit better because of some of the technology, but helping alcoholics is a person-to-person thing, and I can't think that technology has made a lot of change in that.
What other changes in AA service work have you experienced during your time in AA?
Back when I first started, I don't think we had a jail ministry. That's great. And I've seen that change.
How has it changed?
Well, the jail ministry has been established so that members go out to the jail on a regular basis and try to present AA and give them some literature. Will you repeat that question?
What other changes have you noticed over the years, you know, from the way AAs have served, you know, washing coffee cups or, you know, to chairing the meeting? Is there anything in your experience throughout the years that you've noticed, like, man, it ain't the same no more? It's just different, you know, all the way up from, you know, those coffee cups up to, you know, running a convention or, you know, getting some folks together outside of a meeting to paddle down the Broad River, whatnot, just some kind of service. Have you noticed any distinct changes?
You know, because I hadn't really been involved a lot in service work outside my own work in the AA meetings, that's a pretty hard question for me. I do think sponsorship is part of service work. For a while, sponsorship kind of fell back. I think it's getting stronger now. You know, I said before that when I came in, you got a sponsor right off the bat, and you were expected to do what he said. Hadn't been that strong. I think it's getting stronger now. Maybe 10 years ago, a lot of people were going to centers and coming straight into AA, and they just felt kind of independent, I think, like they already had it, and really didn't seek out sponsors. I've noticed in the last several years, though, that that's gotten to be not so true. Sponsorship stronger. I also noticed that a lot of my colleagues in AA enjoy the AA retreats, and there seem to be a lot more of them.
Well, thank you for your time, Bill.
All right.